dig those jazzy rhythms.
Oh, yeah.
Bang, bang, bang.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, bang, bang, bang. So, hey.
Hello.
What's hey, going everybody. On, you guys?
Just hey. Chilling, reading some comic books.
We're this is the Big Planet Comics podcast number 45.
Yeah.
Yep. Countdown to 50.
Countdown to 50. Yeah, that will be, we will figure out that date this
soon-ish.
Week.
Soonish.
Yeah, and then we will figure out what we're doing.
Yeah, it will be an event.
It's going to be a whole event. So we're here in our new headquarters.
Yep, new studio.
Yeah. Yeah. We were recording in my basement, also known as Magna Beam HQ.
Yep.
But now we are recording at Big Planet Comics Vienna, also known as Big Planet Comics Vienna.
Yeah.
HQ. Yeah, so my name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And we're here doing the thing.
We're casting.
Yeah. Always at the top of the show, we like to tell people what they can do with their lives. They can go and shove it. Just shove it, you guys. Or instead of shoving it,
you could go volunteer to fight in a civil war.
Wait, what?
Oh, about the podcast.
Yeah, about the podcast.
Is there a civil war?
Is there a civil war? Is the South rising again?
You never know.
Well, it's,
we are in Virginia.
If you don't want to do that, what you could do instead.
Jared's been reading my scripts again.
Jared has been reading your scripts. You could go to, what can you do? You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
You could go to Facebook.
That's one thing.
.com/Big Planet Comics, or just look for Big Planet Comics on
tweet
Facebook.
Tweet it up at Twitter at Big Planet Comics.
Tweet it up at Twitter.
Tweety.
Yep. You can do all that stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, episode 45, you guys.
That's a lot of episodes.
Is that exciting?
It is because sequentially we're coming close to hitting 52, which is a year, and like just time wise, it's been almost a year since we started.
It's by which the new,
you guys started
the new 52.
Yeah, when Nick and I did our weird
52 review
review, where we were, well, it wasn't even a review. We were just like previewing all of the comics that were coming out.
Yeah. It's kind of the best way to do it. Just like, here's our crazy attitudes and opinions that have no.
We should do on the 52nd episode. We should do a catch up on the new 52.
Oh my god!
Oh god! No!
Oh my god!
We should read every 52.
No! Because that wouldn't be it. We would just sit there with the previews catalog and flip through it and say what we thought they were about.
Yeah. So would we catch up on the new 52, or would we? I'll be reading the new 52 that includes like Ravagers and all these other books.
We kind of have to.
Yeah. Anyway. Whatever's.
Hey. Whatever's.
Whatever's.
What?
Yeah. So what have you guys been up to?
I went down to the mall, which would be the National Green Grass Mall, not an indoor mall.
Not the Galleria.
The H&M.
No. To the Hirshhorn Art Gallery, where they had a outdoor video exhibit by Doug Atkin. I think is how you pronounce it, called Song One, where he projected a video on all sides of the Hirshhorn, which is a round, circular-shaped building. And so no matter where you stood, you would see one or two videos. And he was using I Only Have Eyes for You, like bits of it sampled and sung by different people over and over and over again in a looping set of videos that lasted for 30 minutes and it would just keep going. So anytime you walked up, you saw it.
Sounds pretty loopy.
It was awesome.
Sounds kind of creepy.
No, it's fantastic.
Was it not creepy at all?
No.
I Only Have Eyes for You is a creepy song to me.
Yeah, it was like short films of like.
That's my version.
That's kind of what it was. It was like all these different people singing it, like different. There was like kind of a rocking one and like a
Nick's
dance
was like
one,
the Lyle Lovett version.
Sad one. Yeah, exactly.
Only Have Eyes for You.
It is a creepy. I think it's used in horror movies and stuff.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people making out watching, so I think they were not getting it.
Well, that happens in horror movies too. Those people all got slashered after you left.
They're about to lose their eyes.
Yes.
Oh wait, no. You said you were at the National Mall, not the regular mall, so it wasn't the serial butt slasher.
Didn't they catch that guy? He like fled to like Peru.
No, they caught him. Yeah.
Was he a Nazi war criminal?
A Nazi butt slashing criminal.
It's a buttsy war criminal.
Buttsies.
All right.
What about you, Nick? What have you been up to?
Well, I went to New York.
Oh, yeah, you did go to New York. Yeah,
I went to Coney Island.
Really?
I didn't ride any rides, though. I just went on the beach.
Did you step on any, like, syringes?
I did see a syringe, but it was like an insulin syringe.
It's
sure it was.
Now people are just addicted to donuts at Coney Island, not heroin.
They just ate some funnel cake and they were like, there we go.
They sell them. They sell insulin syringes.
Did you shoot a freak with a paintball gun?
No.
Oh, man.
Is that a thing?
Like one of the first things upon entering Coney Island is a shoot the freak, which is like a paintball shooting gallery with a guy running around in like down on the, like, you know, in a pit basically, and you shoot at him.
Is he like a traditional like 1920s sideshow? Yeah, like dog face boy.
Yeah. More just like a weirdo.
That sounds terrible.
It does.
That sounds like
I need to go back.
I know, I'm just saying.
That sounds like an awful thing to do.
Yeah.
I've just been playing Diablo 3.
That's all?
Like, oh, man, that's definitely all. That's all. What do you mean, is that all?
I mean, that's, like, all you've been able to do.
That is all I want to do.
That's all he wants.
I don't want to do anything else. True.
He's actually playing Diablo right now.
I am. Yeah, my computer, I got a computer that's powerful enough to record podcasts and play Diablo 3 at the same time.
So if our voices slow down, it's because of Diablo.
Yeah, or if you hear me squeal with delay, it's because I'm leveling up.
Most importantly, though, I think we need to get a automobile update from Mr. Nick Liapis.
Oh, no.
Oh, Nick.
Nobody wants to hear that.
I do, because it's a tragedy that never ends.
My car got hit.
Again?
Yeah. And then I hit somebody with a car. I don't know. It's a long story.
It is a long story.
But I'm just saying, this
is like four stories.
Huh?
This is the six.
This is the fourth accident in 1 year.
Holy macaroni.
Yeah.
Wow.
You and that.
Well,
most of them not caused by me.
Only one of them.
No, the minor one was caused by me. All the major ones were somebody else.
You gotta step up your game. Start causing some big ones.
He was drunk and on cocaine during each of those accidents, even though they weren't his fault.
Yeah.
But
you gotta do it.
You step out of your car wobbling around. Oh wait, no, that was the guy that hit your car.
and the girl that hit my car.
Oh jeez.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Jesus. So let's talk about some other stuff besides that.
Yeah. Like making me sad over here.
Yeah. Let's see. We got some upcoming signings and events at the various Big Planet comic stores.
Yep. I think this is our weekly event schedule is about to kick off for the summer.
Yeah, Jared, why don't you tell people? Why don't you tell people what's going on?
Most importantly, this Saturday, if you're listening the week of the 26th, Saturday, May 26th at our College Park store from 1 to 3, we are having local artist Jerry Gaylord, who is the artist on the brand new series Fanboys vs. Zombies, written by Mr. Sam Humphries.
I think we reviewed that.
Mm-hmm. We did.
We said the writing was pretty good.
It was. That's the Sam Humphries
kid. Is that what we said? I hope that's what we said.
Then next Saturday, June 2nd, at our Bethesda store, Russ Kick, who's editing the Graphic Canon, which is a collection of every comic book person who's ever adapted like a classic work of literature from like the Odyssey up to like, I don't know, Phantom of the Opera, you know, anything that possibly has been written that got turned into a comic book, he somehow has gotten the rights to these. So he's got like Robert Crumb and a whole bunch of other weird people in it. Nice. So it's going to be a series of three books. So this is like up to the 18th century or something like
that's
that.
Cool.
Russ Kick, of course, famous nemesis of Mr. Punch.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Punchy? Punchy doesn't hate anyone. He does knock people out, though.
So when is that?
That is June 2nd.
Okay.
A week from Saturday.
Yeah, Nick, you got that? Did you write that down?
Got it. I'm writing it down.
All right. Then next Saturday after that, June 9th, in our Bethesda store again, Nick Abadzis, who is famous for such things
Woo-hoo!
As...
Laika.
Who he came for our signing before.
Laika what?
Like an awesome book about like a dark space. Oh. But yeah, he's got a new old book. Hugo Tate is one of his first characters he's did, and it's in a new edition called Hugo Tate, Oh America.
Oh, so these aren't new Hugo Tate.
I think it might be
it's
new
not
ones.
New Go Tate.
But it might...
It's old Go Tate.
It's true.
It looks cool, though. The cover is very, like, Tintin-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his style.
That's nice. That's what he'd do.
Nice.
And then the Saturday after that, so if you guys want to do it during the week, we just got nothing. But Saturday after that, June 16th, in our Vienna and College Park stores, is free role-playing game day, where if you come in dressed up like an orc... you get free comics.
Or if you come dressed like
a
human.
Comics?
No, sadly. You get a free role-playing game, though.
Free comics for Orcs Day.
Man, if you come in dressed like an orc, I'll give you a free comic. That's
something.
Only on that day.
Something.
Get free copy of Orcs. If you don't come in dressed up, you can still get free role-playing games. So
that is all the stuff.
Through June, and then more stuff in July and August. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff.
We do it.
All right, so what do we do now, usually? What do we do, you guys?
Some information from our viewers/listeners.
Yeah, some mail from our viewers.
Mail, that's it.
We never came up with a viewer mail song.
We sung multiple versions.
Who wants to do it? You can send it electronically or throw like a snail. It is time for viewer mail. Yay.
Woo.
All right, so we got two letters this week, both from the same guy.
What?
Well, because he sent one for one episode, and then we forgot to read it, and then he sent one for another episode. And we didn't do one last week.
So, so what did he send for this week?
So basically he says, this is from Nate Carlos.
What up, Nate?
He says, hey there, cool guys. So I assume he's talking to me.
He's talking to Nick, too.
Yeah, well, he's probably just talking to me. He said in the spirit of this question was in the spirit of Avengers versus X-Men. Who would win in a fight between Dupe and Shade the Changing Man? Also, I'm assuming Milligan would write it, but who do you think should draw it? Nate Carlos. Not saying Nate Carlos should draw it. He's saying his name.
I'd read it.
As people traditionally do at the end of letters from time to time.
Oh, he didn't like sign off like sincerely or.
He says we're just going to say servant. That he said signing off.
I'm pretty sure. First of all, the dupe would mop the floor with Shay the Changing Man.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Dupe, going with dupe all the way.
Dupe's like got like some. He can just like do whatever.
He can do everything. Yeah,
he can do. Dupe can do anything.
He'll just like Shay the Changing Man and be like, "Let's fight," and Dupe be like, snap his fingers and make him disappear.
Dupe can do anything if he puts his mind to it.
He'll say something sassy first.
Yeah, yeah.
Shay the Changing Man does have his,
and then Shay would explode.
Well, Shay can alter reality too with his crazy coat.
Hold on, I just want to get some Uncanny X-Force comics and make Nick read all of the Dupe dialogue because that was pretty good.
Dupe famously had like a whole language of his own that you could decode.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Did you ever decode all of it?
No, what am I?
Nick.
What am I? Decoded all of it. Baby who reads comics? I don't like that
stuff. You can probably find it on the internet.
But who would draw that? That is a good question.
Mike Allred.
I mean, that's the obvious choice.
Kind of go to.
Mike Allred did draw Dupe and also drew Shay the Changing Man in one of the Vertigo like Winter's Edge things or something like that.
Actually, I think any of the current artists on the Adventure Time would be doing pretty good for a Dupe.
Also, Chris Bacalo drew both as well.
Really?
Because he drew Shade the Changing Man
for
a long time.
And for like every issue, pretty
now
much.
Now he draws Wolverine and X-Men. It's got Dupe in it.
That's true.
It does have Dupe. They should call it Wolverine and Dupe in the X-Men.
That's true. Didn't they have a Wolverine Dupe miniseries?
They did. It was drawn by Darwin Cook and written by Peter Milligan.
Wow. There you go.
Nice. Yeah. And it was awesome.
It was great.
It's in the X-Statics hardcover. Available now for $125 MSRP. So I think that answers that question.
Yes.
Done. What else we got?
I hope you're satisfied, Nate Carlos. Oh, wait, you're not. Here's another question from Nate Carlos. He says, hey, guys.
Hey.
Not cool anymore.
So now he's talking to us.
We were cool. After we didn't answer his first question, he was like, I don't know about these guys anymore. All right, so he says lately he's been reading Dreadstar and loving it. That's cool. Dreadstar is cool. Well, Dreadstar is the Jim Starlin thing, right?
It is.
Yeah. I used to believe comics from the 80s felt somewhat dated. A lot of them do. But reading this along with Alien Legion, which I would say feels pretty dated, and Mars? I don't know what Mars is.
Is that? Wow.
No, I wish I had a cricket sound effect. has showed me how wrong I was. Do you guys have any older recommendations besides the obvious choices of Watchmen, A Dark Knight Returns, et cetera?
Et cetera.
So good stuff from the 80s.
Just 80s. Cerebus.
Cerebus is good stuff from the 80s.
Started in the 70s, got a little rough, and then it got better with almost every issue, and 80s was kind of the peak.
It was definitely good in the 80s.
Another one, yeah. The Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Still good.
You took mine, Jared.
In fact, reprinted.
Thanks, Jared. Why don't you let people go around, and why don't you let Nick say Ninja Turtles?
Ninja Turtles. I like it. It's a good choice.
I'm going to go with something a little stranger, and I'm going to say Doom Quest, nice. Which I was talking to with somebody earlier today, and a story I really like.
Doom Quest.
It's a story where Dr. Doom and Iron Man get transported to the land of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table.
You told me about that. I still haven't read it. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, and another one I really like. I don't know why I'm going superhero. I mean, Cerebus and Ninja Turtles are definitely two that I love. But I would also say Sword of the Atom.
That one is amazing.
Which is similar. I guess I'm picking superheroes that turn into fantasy books. But Sword of the Atom is basically the Atom gets shrunk down and there's this like almost fantasy medieval society that he becomes a knight in, and like it's just an awesome story. He like rides around on a frog.
Fights a giant crocodile, which would be a regular sized crocodile when he's big.
It's cool.
Usagi Yojimbo, another great 80s black and white explosion look. And
anything by Mobius, really, from the 80s.
Oh man.
I got a good one.
What?
Akira.
That started in the 80s. Akira
is definitely from the
80s. Because the movie came out in like 88 or 89.
Yeah, so obviously.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
It seems now like that we're in the store.
I don't know.
You can actually do research right in front of you.
We could do research right in front of your face.
Another one I'm going to proselytize for because I always do it. G.I. Joe, Real American Hero.
Boo.
Boo.
Akira Volume 6, 1990.
Well, that's Volume 6, though.
That's what I'm saying. So it finished up in 90. That's crazy.
So
also, Webo Spider-Man from the 80s is pretty good.
The covers were good.
some of it's really good.
Yeah.
That's when like Kraven's Last Hunt and stuff was.
Happening. I mean, Kraven's Last. Well, just say Kraven's Last Hunt.
Kraven's Last Hunt.
Oh, yay! That one's great.
Kraven's Last Hunt. Yeah. Kraven's Last Hunt is best. It's like the Dark Knight Returns of Spider-Man, but not really, but kind of.
Yeah. Isn't the Gene DeWolf stuff in that, too?
Yeah.
Web of Spider-Man.
Yeah. Is that good, though?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It's also the stuff where Tombstone throws Robbie Robertson out of a helicopter in there.
No. Nope.
Whoa. Yeah, that freaked me out when I was a little kid.
Spider-Man in the 80s is actually mostly pretty good.
You mean the trade paperback Spider-Man in the 80s? All right, so that's some stuff from the 80s, right?
There you go.
That's all kind of... Jared, I thought you were going to say ElfQuest.
ElfQuest, the first four books are amazing. Yeah, sorry.
Dazzler the movie?
That Dazzler the movie
Wait,
is actually...
Wait, Dazzler good. The movie, the comic?
Yeah. Oh. Not Dazzler the movie, which is a thing that does not exist.
Actually, a good amount of those Marvel graphic novels.
Yeah, Marvel graphic novels. They're actually putting out a thing called Spider-Man, the graphic novels. I'm going really superhero heavy on this, but whatever. Because I feel like when people think about comics from the 80s being dated, they think like all superhero comics from the 80s are pretty dated. But I feel like there was some good stuff.
Well, like as long as there's like a cool like Spider-Man graphic novel from the 80s that you're about to mention that has some sort of fantasy theme, I think I'll be on board with you.
You mean Hookie?
New Teen Titans?
Hookie?
That's a good one. Hookie.
New Teen Titans Hookie. Is good.
New Teen Titans is great.
Really? I've never read those.
Oh, my God. There are two things. There's one called The Judas Contract. And then there's another one, Terra Incognito. I can't remember which one is first and which one is second.
But those are like the two.
But it's different. Like this big ongoing story basically about Terra becoming a Teen Titan and then betraying the Teen Titans.
Really?
Yeah. And it's
that's
it's,
pretty heavy
it's got
for
that
a
kinda,
teen superhero book.
Yeah. I think a lot of people gravitated to that book in the same way they did to X-Men at the time. It's just that in the way that it just like had all these really character driven stories. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, speaking of, when was the kind of height of like Claremont X-Men, like Dark Phoenix? Was that early 80s
early
or 70s?
80s. I think it was late 70s, early 80s. So, I think Giant Size X-Men was like 75.
Oh, was it that early? Good
I think so, yeah. I might be wrong. I don't know. I'm definitely not the guy to ask about X-Men stuff.
Yep.
Although right now, X-Men comics,
good
pretty,
stuff.
Pretty dang
pretty
good.
Pretty awesome.
All right, so Nate, Carlos, thank you for the questions.
Thank you, sir.
Thank everybody else. You know, what's going on with you guys?
Yeah, where are the questionings?
Why don't you send us some questions? If you want to, maybe they just don't know where to send them.
That could be a problem. we've heard that complaint.
Yeah, we did that guy. He was like, where are some of the questions? I don't want to listen to the podcast and find out. I just want to read it somewhere.
We're like, problem solved.
He's like, podcast at bigplanetcomics.com. I cannot remember that. Oh, spoiler alert. That's what I was going to say. That's where you send the questions.
What?
Podcast at bigplanetcomics.com
or
you
what?
Can tweet us.
It's true.
You can tweet at us.
Yeah, tweet us.
At Big Planet Comics.
You can send us a letter in the mail. You can drop us a note when you're in the store.
Or you can call the podcast hotline.
What?
Which is going to get closed down pretty soon if nobody else calls it. And that's 1703-539-CAST. That number again, 1703-539-CAST. Mm-hmm. We need your donations to keep the show going.
To fix Nick's car.
Yeah. If you donate $100, you get a mug with a picture of Ira Glass on it to fix Nick's car. All right. So that's it for the beginning of the show. That's pretty good, right?
Cool.
Yeah. You guys want to do?
Week.
Yeah. All right. See you guys later.
What?
No. Let's do some reviews. You guys want to do that?
Yes.
All right.
We love comics. They're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
It is time for reviews, boys and girls.
All right.
Every time I hear that song, I think Yay. Of like I don't know, just like
Reading Rainbow.
Creepy. Yeah. 3-2-1 Contact. Electric Company. Kids Incorporated.
Reading Rainbow.
Reading Rainbow. Jared already said Reading Rainbow.
Did he?
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm tuning out.
Nick's stealing all
this
my
is
stuff.
All over. All right. So the first thing we're going to review this week is called Best of Enemies, A History of U.S. and Middle East Relations, Part 1, 1783 to 1953, hardcover by Jean-Pierre Filou and David Bay. It's David Bay, right?
Maybe.
Is it really Part 1?
It is part one, because there are not enough comics about politics in the Middle East coming out right now.
Well, the funny thing is, I was like, oh, it didn't go that far. And I was like, it only went to like 1953.
You finish it, you're like, well, this only goes, when did they write this? This only goes to 1953.
Because America's been screwing around in the Middle East for so long, it needs several books to cover.
Well, so, yeah. Jared.
Yes, Kevin.
Why don't you tell people what this comic's about?
All right, so there's a little bit of hyperbole of kind of...
Hyperbole.
Well, I always say hyperbole.
Hyperbole.
And people think that's stupid.
So. Hyperbole.
Hyperbole. About the U.S. Mucking around in Iraq at the beginning, which is a little painful. But then they get back into just the history of it by jumping back to the earliest days in which the Mediterranean largely was under the threat of lots of pirates who were based out of ports in North Africa. And most European nations were getting, you know, pirate ships. This was like back to the 18th century. And then the U.S., when it started building up as a naval power and sailing around the world, had several boats and people getting kidnapped and held for ransom and stuff. Hence the famous Marine Corps anthem from the halls of Montezuma, which they were fighting in Mexico to the shores of Tripoli, where they went to Tripoli, Libya, and tried to steal a boat back. So that's where they start, and then they go all the way up through the CIA trying to overthrow the Shah, or not the Shah, the kind of almost democratically elected guy of Iran, because we don't like that guy. And they did. So it kind of covers all the shenanigans that U.S. has been up to, as well as
we never liked the leader of Iran.
We did for a while. We liked the Shah. He was our puppet. We liked him a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of pirates in this comic. It's pretty crazy. I wasn't expecting that many. It's all about pirates and fighting in the waters with cannons and stuff.
You go back 200 years.
I was kind of surprised.
Pirates.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what's interesting. I mean, yeah. This is part one, and obviously the next volume will cover the more recent stuff. But I feel yep. like I mean, assuming there is going to be another volume.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of the stuff that comes out very much just covers like the last 50 years.
Yeah. I didn't know any of this stuff.
And so like I feel like I've read a lot of that stuff quite a bit. But this is a lot more interesting. But the thing that makes this book so amazing, because in a lot of ways, it's not like an information dump, but there is just like, it's a little bit like an information dump. But David Bay's art.
Yeah.
So David Bay, if you don't know him, kind of broke out for L'Ascension du Haut Mal, or Epileptic,
yep.
which is the true story about his older brother who has epilepsy and all the many, many travails his family goes through trying to find a cure and help him out. And it's just heartbreaking. But like, he's... David is just an amazing artist, and even as a kid, you know, growing up with his brother, there's a lot of illustration of him like getting obsessed with the Mongols and all kinds of weird like violent historical warriors and stuff. And in this book, he's really set loose to draw all these crazy arabesque you know, sultans and pirates and soldiers and all kinds of crazy stuff. And David Bay draws a lot of dream comics as well, and so there's a very kind of surreal influence to this art in this, and it fits perfectly, I think.
Yeah, and he does interesting things, like there's like one of the pages is about like Roosevelt renewing the lend lease, or like basically it's about like Roosevelt dealing with oil in the Middle East, and it's like the page is surrounded by like oil pipes and stuff like that.
And
like the dream sequence stuff, like because he did what's that series of books that, oh geez, I'm totally blanking right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it too.
But. I feel like a dummy. But like at the beginning, it feels a lot more like that. Like the beginning is almost hard to grasp because it's like told in such a weird, surreal kind of way.
Yeah.
But his art's just so good. He's really good at caricature, but also staying within his style. And like you can always tell you're looking at his stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And can we talk about Kermit Roosevelt for a little bit? Because every time he shows up, he's hilariously drawn.
Yeah.
And like, there's a couple parts where he's meeting the Shah, and like a car pulls up and picks up the Shah, and like Kermit Roosevelt's like hiding under a sheet, and you just see his like his eyes poking out and his creepy smile, and he's like hiding, and he's like, ugh, and he has a meeting, and then he goes back under his sheet. it's really weird.
Like, I can't be seen.
Yeah.
So for like a book that deals with the subject, it's got a lot of personality, obviously.
It's amazing. Yeah. Just for the cartooning alone, it's fantastic, but it's actually very well researched and well written. And like Kevin said, it's stuff I didn't even know some of this stuff.
Yeah. We'll be back. We'll let you guys know more when volume 2 comes out.
Yeah.
We'll let you know what happens if you don't have access to the internet. All right. So speaking of journalistic comics. Oh, do you like that?
Segway.
Up next, we've got a Cartoon Picayune. This is a series that is edited by Josh Kramer. And basically, what I would call this is the This American Life of comics.
Yeah, basically.
That's it's the way it feels like to
slice
me.
Slice of life stories.
Yeah,
becoming this international life with later issues.
Well, sure. But I mean, in tone and like in the way that it deals with like, you know, kind of small stories and but shows that they're really interesting. Like the first story in this that goes over the first two issues is about, you know, high school ski jumping team.
Yeah, up in Vermont.
Which I know nothing about high school jumping.
I know nothing about ski jumping, period.
Well, I should say I knew nothing about high school ski jumping, but now I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it starts out with just stuff by him, but then eventually, I think starting with the second issue, there are other people that work on it, including... Some big names. Yeah, James Sturm does a story in here, and Bill Volk, and some other people. I think it's a pretty cool series. It's kind of took me by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, the first issue is basically Josh Kramer went to, what's the cartooning school up in Vermont?
The Center for Cartoon Studies.
Yeah, and so I think this was just like his final project that he was doing. He's like, you know, there's so many interesting stories around here. I'm going to go talk to these kids who ski, you know, do ski jumping, and I'm going to talk to this apple orchard farmer guy. So it just started off as that, but they're all like Joe Sacco. It's just straight reporting journalism style stuff. And with that as the theme, he was able to expand it out and get other people who are doing reporting stuff. I'll be interested if Joe Sacco does a short for this at some point. But yeah, the third issue has like a thing about the Beiruti politician who was like involved with everything but largely rebuilt the city after the Civil War and gets assassinated.
Yeah, who drew that one?
That one was great.
That was definitely like the most the cartooning was the best.
Yeah,
that
this is such a good
art. I mean, besides the James Sturm thing, which is very short.
That's Andy Warner.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I thought the one about the local mayoral election was pretty interesting, too.
That might have been Josh Kramer actually did that one.
There's actually a good quote in there that stuck with me from one of the mayoral candidates, which is strange. But he said, he's like, sometimes you preach to the choir because you want them to sing louder. I thought that was a pretty cool,
That's true. Yeah, there's some cool ones. I like the one about the guy working on
the apple farmer,
the apple cider.
There's a really funny part in that one where it's just like,
I've been growing apples since I was 10 or 11 years old.
I think that's why it was funny, because I was reading the whole thing like that in my head.
Voice.
Just like an old man voice.
That was Catherine Roy and the James Sturm. They both worked on that one, following around a guy running for governor of Vermont in 2010.
Oh, the funny part in the apple one is where he's like, all these other farmers are stupid. I'm a cider farmer. Like, these guys' apples all died, but my apples are awesome.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a frost, and it killed all the apples.
Yeah.
The cider trees blossom later.
It just sounds like he's bragging a little bit.
He is.
He's like winking.
Yeah. But no, these are very cool. Definitely worth checking out. I think we're sold out of them at the moment.
But apparently Josh Kramer is based in D.C. now. So another local guy.
Let's go knock on his door.
Yeah, let's go get him.
Yep. So we'll get more.
Indeed. All right, next up we got a new retrofit book.
What?
This is Daddy Lightning by Tom Hart. I think this is the first new comic I've seen from Tom Hart in a while.
I feel like he still does. Oh my gosh.
Does he do Hutch Owens online, maybe?
I think he's a largely online guy now. And I think this one too is like he talks about like a class he's teaching or something, so he might just be doing a lot of
teaching.
Yeah, teaching rather than doing comics.
But Daddy Lightning's kind of an allegorical story about becoming a new father, but told in this crazy, like, fantasy world dream sequence.
Yes.
Insanity. But in a really funny way. I don't know. I thought it was really good. It had a lot of energy, and it's basically his daughter keeps pooing her pants.
Yeah.
And he is in this crazy world where they have international swaddling contests.
Yeah. And he's definitely a single father in this. He's like trying to do all this by himself and being judged by all the other mothers running around.
So he's running around. He has no money and he's trying to get like diapers. Yeah. Basically,
through barter system or schemes.
So he enters an international swaddling contest after this like sort of mystical woman
swaddling
teaches
guru.
Him the best way to swaddle.
Yeah,
and I don't know. It was crazy, but I found it really funny and really enjoyable.
Really
Tom Hart has a really frantic style, and it definitely lends itself to this story.
Yeah, it's kind of got the spirit of some of the best early Hutch Owens stuff, which was just like manic but with full of great characters, and this really definitely lives up to that older awesome stuff.
I could definitely see. I mean, I don't have kids, thank God. I would be awful, but I can definitely see like just the insanity of having to deal with like a tiny person that poops their pants all the time.
Yeah,
one of the running themes in this is that like the baby poops in so much that he never has time to poop.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Awesome. And then when he finally does, it's at a totally inopportune time. It's just really fun. I don't know that there's like a whole lot to say about it. It's a really short thing.
I really liked it.
I think it's
one of the better retrofit books so far.
Yeah, I really liked that Box Brown thing wasn't retrofit, was it? Oh, I love Bowman.
Bowman is amazing.
Oh, I love it so much. It's so good. Yeah, but this is really good too, and definitely worth checking out, especially if you just had a kid and you want to freak yourself out.
Yep. More especially if you're pregnant, then you'll panic entirely.
Indeed. So I was trying to find a segue, but I don't have one. Up next, we have the Dead Enders soft cover. This is by Ed Brubaker and Warren Pleece. This covers is it 19 issues?
16,
Dead Enders?
I think.
16 issues, and then the Winter's Edge, speaking of Winter's Edge, Vertigo story at the beginning. Yeah, I started reading this, and I was like, I thought I had read Dead Enders before. I don't remember any of this, but it was because I was reading a story I hadn't read
before. Much later short story, yeah.
Yeah.
So Dead Enders, like, this was published through Vertigo, and it was Ed Brubaker's series, and he hadn't really done much like big publisher stuff before this. He'd done a lot of self-published stuff.
Yeah, he had done Complete Low Life, which was his self-published stuff, and then he had done, I think at this point, a book called The Fall, which was with Jason Lutz, which is an amazing book
short story.
So out of print. But yeah, I was actually keeping up with Ed Brubaker already at this point. I had become a fan of his already. But I think this might be
kind of
before Sleeper.
Attempt book. Oh, much earlier than Sleeper, yeah. So anyway, so this came out for Vertigo and obviously ran 16 issues. And as you tell by the last few chapters of this, got canceled. But he managed to tie it up in a good way. It is not horribly rushed like some canceled out of the blue stories. So as a whole, this is a very good story, which in strange, surreal fashion is somewhat after a weird apocalypse that they don't really explain. The world has changed.
Refer to it as the cataclysm.
The cataclysm, right. There is no more weather, so there's no sunshine, there's no rain, unless you use an artificial weather machine to generate sunlight or rain or whatever.
Yeah.
And there is a city that everyone lives in. The downtown part of the city is where all the rich, nice, happy people live, and they have sunshine all the time. Out on the edge are the slums where like all the poor, kind of thrown out people live, and they basically get rain or clouds, and that's it. And this is where the main characters live, who are all kind of like delinquent, drug dealing, partying, crazy kids who ride around on scooters and fight and have a great
time.
Is it?
They live in Section 5, which is basically District 12.
Yep.
but way before there was any such thing as District 12. But and they're kind of like mods. They all ride around on scooters and wear jackets
Modish
that have like frilly furry collars.
Yeah, and buttons.
And they're
all
kind
around.
Of and the main character is I can't remember his name.
Beezer?
Right, yeah, Beezer. Yeah, is a drug dealer who's kind of being tracked by the government, and everybody thinks he's kind of paranoid. And that's kind of how the story starts, and then it turns into a huge, bigger than that story.
He's kind of the main plot line for this ongoing series, which is that since he was a younger kid, has started having hallucinations, and we as readers quickly realize that these hallucinations are before the cataclysm happened, what this world used to be like. And so he's like suddenly has a strange vision, and everything around him is repaired, and there's sun shining, and everyone's happy rather than this destroyed wasteland he lives in.
And then it uses all of that framework to kind of tell a lot of personal relationship stories and stuff. I feel like this was kind of like what Scott Pilgrim was before there was something like Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's not as like crazy and over the top. It seems to take place in a somewhat grounded world, even though it's a futuristic world where there are like bootleg weather machines and stuff. But it's really cool. It's got like a I don't know what kind of feel it has. Like a Blade Runner, Hunger Games,
Scott Pilgrim.
When I was reading this, I was reading another book called Blue Monday, which was also like about a bunch of mod high school kids. A really great book that I don't think a lot of people pay much attention to anymore. And it reminds me of that a little bit too. It's funny. And Warren Pleece is a really good artist.
The art's great. It's highly entertaining.
Yeah, it's a great book, and it's cool. Like you get a whole story and like a big story
in this 300 pages or something.
Yeah, and like you said, the ending was a little rushed. I felt that way when it was coming out too, because it was just like all of a sudden, nobody knew it was going to end, and then it ended like.
But
I say nobody, like 10 people were reading it.
But there's like an epilogue and stuff. Like he ties it up nicely, even though it's a little feels rushed.
I think they had a couple issues. Vertigo's pretty good about that. I feel like usually there was another series. And this called Outlaw Nation.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of ended in a similar fashion, and that tied up too. And there's a nice big book of that too. I'd like to see them put some of the other stuff like Exterminators in one big book. And
that's true. That'd be nice.
It's a good way to read, because nobody's going to read half of one of these things.
It's true. You just want to get a big story and read it.
Yeah, but if you want to see where Ed Brubaker got his start, because this is probably the earliest thing of his in print at this point.
I think so.
Definitely check this out. It's because it's good.
It's really good.
It's great.
It's good. All right. Up next, we got Hardcore number one.
Yeah.
Pilot season 3, number 5, Hardcore number one.
Hold on. So,
Well, let me just say this is by Robert Kirkman and Mark Silvestri.
All right. You should explain.
Oh, that's why I didn't like the art.
No, he didn't draw it, though.
Oh, did he not?
No.
I didn't
really?
Oh, yeah. He's listed on the cover, but on the inside, it doesn't say that he did anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they were both doing all the pilot season stuff together.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so
who did the art?
I forget who it was.
Well,
it's said
crazy.
In the book, but
we don't actually have the book because it sold out everywhere.
Wow, weird.
Because people, because Robert Kirkman's like Stan Lee now or something.
Yeah,
it's like
he's getting there.
Everybody knows.
The weird thing is, I don't think people realize that this is the pilot season because it says number one on the cover, but it's just the pilot.
Explain what pilot season is.
Well, pilot season was Wildstorm's annual tradition where they had people, you know, do a first issue of a new series, and then people would vote on it at the end. And the one that got voted the most votes would become a regular series.
Gotcha.
But Wildstorm, or not Wildstorm, was it Wildstorm? No, it was Top
Image,
Cow.
Top Cow at Image, yeah.
And I'm not even sure, does Top Cow still exist?
I think
yeah, they put out, they do Darkness and
Witchblade.
Does it say Top Cow on
Yeah, it does, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and then this book was long delayed. It was supposed to be the last of those, of that series, which was all Kirkman books.
Yeah, the top, the Robert Kirkman.
And so this season. One finally came out, and it doesn't say anything about, you know,
pilot season
or anything.
Nope.
And I'm pretty sure there's not any more of it coming out.
No, I don't think so. No, I mean, they don't indicate it's a one-shot on the cover, but it's a one-shot.
Yeah. And it's actually really good, though. I liked it.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the art, like I said, but whoever it was, it's good we don't know because we don't have to say his name.
I thought the art was all right.
I thought it was good.
Yeah, really? I don't know. Yeah. It looked like Mark Silvestri. but the story.
Yeah, it's basically just like this guy who can take over other people's bodies remotely.
Yep.
To assassinate others.
Or do whatever. It's kind of thriller, spy stuff.
Yeah. And it's hard to explain. To not say anything else without giving the entire plot.
Yeah.
But that's the basic gist. He's on a mission, and you see how it works, and there's, you know, somebody observing him, and then
a twist.
You see a little bit of his past with some rivals, and then there's a twist at the end.
That will never pay off.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's the thing. It's pilot season, so one of these books, they started like 3 years ago.
No, I don't think one of these books is going to get made into a series now.
Really?
Yeah, they basically abandoned this pilot series. I mean, because they didn't put pilot series on this one.
Yeah, they put pilot season.
So like, or pilot season. Yeah, so like,
weird.
You know, they just kind of swept that under the door.
Yeah, and there's nothing on it that
rug.
Says like
swept that under the door. Is that a thing people say?
There's nothing
onto
in the
porch.
There's like nothing in the book that tells you to go vote for it.
Yeah, and there's not even a thing in the book that's like, hey, this was a pilot season book, but that's not happening. They're just like, wait, what? No, that's not a thing.
Hmm.
Yeah,
weird.
But if there was still a pilot season, Stealth should have won, because Stealth was awesome.
Stealth was really good.
And to let you know how late this is,
we
didn't even cover this on the podcast, because this is before we even started doing the podcast of the last one.
Yeah,
these came out.
This is more than a year late.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I remember. It was like 3 years ago, maybe?
No, I don't think it's quite that old, but it's still
a little over a year.
Yeah.
Remember that Murderer one?
Yeah,
that
Murderer
was really
was. There was
maybe
Devil,
we did talk about
Demon?
Stealth.
I don't think we did talk about Stealth.
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. They were pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyway, Stealth should have been in our best single issue of the year consideration.
It might have been
when we
2 years ago.
All right, so but Hardcore is good, but you're not going to be able to get it.
Yeah, they might reprint
it out everywhere.
And for the previous pilot seasons, they have put each year into a trade paperback. And since it's all Robert Kirkman,
they probably
won't.
They will.
Robert Kirkman's name will sell anything.
But I don't know how they're going to put it out.
Robert Kirkman writes short stories.
Like Robert Kirkman, issue ones.
Yeah.
Sure. They'll just call pilot. Suckers. I mean, they would just call pilot season.
Maybe.
No.
Robert
Kirkman, confuse people.
Robert Kirkman pilot season.
Yeah.
Or something. And then you'd be like, this won't have Hardcore in it.
True.
All right. So that's that. I don't even know. It's such a weird thing, especially to release. It's basically reads like the first issue of a series. That was the whole point of this thing. And, you know, it's basically, there's a big twist. You're never going to find out.
Yeah.
Send Robert Kirkman an email if you want to know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
That would have been a cool thing if they had put a little thing in the back. It was like, here's, you know, if we were going to make this into a series, here's what we had planned for it, that kind of thing.
That's true.
But, you know, it's like $3. So what are you going to do?
True.
All right. Up next, we have Holiday. That's with two L's. This is a new soft cover by Nate Bowden and Doug Dabbs.
It's pretty much a straight up adaptation of the Tombstone story.
The pizza.
The story of Tombstone Pizza. This is like those weird manga that were coming out a few years ago about like 7-Eleven and ramen noodles. That is not what this is at all, by the way.
No.
No. Sorry.
This is about like Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp and Billy the Kid.
And Emilio Estevez.
And Emilio Estevez. And Lou Diamond Phillips.
And that naked lady that rides on the horse.
Yeah.
Oh, that burned into my childhood.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what
you're talking about. It was in Young Guns,
so
too.
So if you've seen the movie Tombstone, it's exactly like that, but set in a modern setting.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where they're
Modern-ish,
yeah.
Like modern noir, 1940s-ish.
Yeah. So there's like kind of like Wild West-style cops and... just lawless gangs running the streets. And there's a big war between all of them.
Yeah, and like just... like Tombstone, it's like this kind of lawless town, and then Wyatt Earp comes in, and he's like a new, in this he's like a new cop who's like determined to clean the place up.
Yeah,
including a very corrupt police force, and so there's like all these different sides. It's like The Wire trying to do a Western or something. So you've got corrupt cops and drug dealers on the streets who are all working together, and Wyatt Earp, and then his very sick friend Doc Holliday.
Doc Holliday is kind of the focus of most of this.
Right.
Should we say what's going on with Doc Holliday in this book?
I thought that was one of the better twists.
I thought that was a weird.
It's kind of weird, but it's like kind of adds to his like noir. Like,
well, I guess that does
up.
Mean it's.
Good
I guess
update.
I will say this won't tell too much, but I will say I guess the twist does mean that it is pretty much modern day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's or true. At least it takes place after the
80s. That's true. But yeah, he was dying after of consumption, 80s. So they've made him still very sick because he's constantly coughing and, you know, passing out and still trying to be tough and having to shoot people down
he's
the streets.
He's a pretty interesting character in this. Yeah. He's the most interesting one because he's like a crazy dentist, sadist guy. And
Yeah, was he a dentist? Was that a real thing? He was doc.
He was a doctor more than a dentist, but
and,
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, and he works with the cops and... He's really weird. He does some really messed up things, but he's still
he does really
sort of likable.
Well,
despite all of that,
well.
He's definitely like an anti-hero. Like,
yeah, he's compelling.
Yeah,
give him that.
Han Solo is like an anti-hero. I don't know if Doc Holliday's an anti-hero.
Yeah, well, he's like a noir style
like
hero.
He's just like a villain, right? He's like a villain who stars in his own comic.
Well, he's
not
after,
a good
he's
guy.
After the bad guys.
Yeah, but they're not really any heroes in this. Maybe,
Wyatt Earp.
Wyatt Earp, kind of.
Yeah.
He's too good. I like him.
But it's not called Wyatt Earp. Wasn't there a movie called Wyatt Earp?
Yeah.
Like Kevin Costner.
Yeah. Showdown with
he's
OK
a,
Corral.
He's a complex character.
No, I'll agree with that. No, I'm not saying, I think he is interesting. I just think he's not any sort of hero at all.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. He's well, something.
Anyway, that's the story.
That is the story.
The
and
art,
then there's the art.
Yeah, so the art's kind of cool because like Nick said, it's all updated, so they're all running around with 45s and, you know, wearing fedoras and trench coats, even though it's modern times. The one thing, like, the kids are all written like they're very street, so there's a lot of, like, street dialogue, which comes off a little forced sometimes. Other times it works. Other times you're just like, oh, you're trying
to most part, the dialogue was pretty good. I enjoyed it. It felt like I was watching a really good movie.
But the art, like, I don't know if it was just printed badly or he just, like, used a lot of splatter of his blacks and stuff.
Yeah,
just,
I don't think it's the printing. The printing's actually pretty good in this book. Yeah, like, the blacks are really crisp, and I think there are just a lot of them.
Yeah.
So the way he does shading and stuff, there's no gradient. It's just black or it's white. And I think because of that, because there's no gray, you'll have stuff, like a weird problem I had was there was a scene where two people were talking. One of them was Doc Holliday, who has a mustache.
Right.
The other guy did not have a mustache, but because of the shading, it looked like he had a mustache. And, like, I couldn't tell who was who. There was also a scene where somebody gets shot in the hand, but I thought that Doc Holliday's girlfriend got shot in the head and killed.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God. And then I was like, oh, she's still alive.
Yep.
She got shot in the head. And
that's exactly what I thought, too. The next week, I'm like, oh, okay.
You're like,
yeah. It gets a little better as it goes along. It's a little. I think it's also kind of sketchy. So
yeah, it's very sketchy. Almost like Riley Rossmo, the guy that does like Proof and stuff.
Right.
But I thought the facial expressions are really cool, and the action's actually really well thought out when they actually have the big showdown at the end. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's bad. I just had like one or two problems with like little.
I had more than one or two problems with it, but I mean, it tells the story. I just think that it had, like Kevin said, there are problems with it, so it's not as good as it should have been. But
it's still cool. And if you're interested in that, you know,
If you like westerns or crime and westerns, you should definitely.
Yeah,
this.
I think more westerns. It definitely has that western feel to it to me. Even though the setting is so different, and that made it a little bit different than all these kind of crime books that have been coming out.
True.
So it did make it a little bit more interesting. I think people should check this out.
Yeah, I really liked it. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
All right, what do we got next? We got Justice League Dark number 9. I know you're probably thinking, Justice League Dark number 9? What are these guys doing? But this is written by Jeff Lemire. Jeff Lemire.
He's taken over.
I think it's Lemire. And this is still drawn by Michael Janin.
I'm pretty sure he was drawing it before.
Yeah, no, he was. But this is basically taking Justice League Dark in a new direction with new members, it says right on the cover. Yeah.
Is it? Because I haven't been reading it.
I've been keeping up with it. So... When last we left Justice League Dark, there was a crossover with iVampire, and basically it was still the first storyline, and the characters were kind of together, but none of them liked each other and had no reason to be together, so they kind of all split up at the end.
Well, and Shade the Changing Man went crazy.
Yeah, he went crazy and teleported away with somebody. So this starts off with, you know, who is it? What's the guy's name? Yeah, Felix Faust in the jungle. Who? This is his introduction to the DC New 52 because he hasn't been around. And we see that John Constantine is there to do something. You're not quite sure. And then we have the appearance of a new character who's a new addition to the team, who is Black Orchid.
Yeah, not a new character.
Yeah, well, she's new to the team. And then I was like, who is this person? And then Kevin explained to me that she's a Neil Gaiman character.
Yeah, from like, an old, like, three-issue premiere prestige format.
Yep, illustrated by Dave McKean, out in a deluxe hardcover.
Yeah, just recently got reprinted, which makes sense now.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it's good that it got reprinted. It's a good book.
It is really good, actually.
You know, it's like pre-Vertigo, right?
Yeah, it's either very early Vertigo or right before.
Yeah, but they introduce her, and then...
And this focuses mostly on Constantine, and they get a little more of, like, an official, like, mission, instead of just kind of getting together to do stuff. They're visited by, what's his name? Steve Trevor, from Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And actually, Deadman even comments at one point in here. He's like, we're like a real superhero team.
Yeah, right.
Because
he
kind of secretly wants to be a superhero, which I think is funny.
Yeah. So they all get together, and one of the new team members is the guy from My Vampire, whose name I can't remember right now. But
Michael?
No.
Vampire.
Vampire from My Vampire.
Yeah. There
you go. But anyway, so they all get together and fight Felix Faust. It's pretty straightforward, but then there's a crazy twist at the end that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so that's what happens. But overall, like, I feel like it feels a lot different than Justice League Dark has felt. Like, it's
a little more lively.
Yeah, it's definitely like that was the impression I got. It's less dark.
Yeah,
it's definitely a little more fun.
Yes, it's very
and
fun.
Even the art is like a little bit brighter, even though it's the same guy.
Yeah,
and just everything about it is kind of like
it's more focused. Like they actually have a reason to do all the stuff that they're doing. It's not as scattered, and all the characters' relationships are more well defined in this issue. Like the stuff between Zatanna and Constantine is pretty interesting.
There's good, really just good dialogue between every character, pretty much.
Yeah,
I've always really liked Peter Milligan, but in his later years, he tends to be kind of dour. Like his writing can be just a bit of a downer.
Yeah.
And I feel like Lemire definitely has like a lighter touch. I mean, if you look at Sweet Tooth, even though it's like a dark subject, he deals with it really well. If you look at his Superboy stuff, I mean, that was really fun. And Animal Man, as dark as that is also really fun.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised they didn't stick Animal Man on this team, to be honest. But I guess he's not magic.
He could end up on the team.
Yeah,
but
there'll be a good crossover, I'm sure.
Yeah, it looks like they're using this book also to introduce a lot more of the Vertigo stuff into the DC universe.
True.
You mean like the Vertigo universe Tesseract?
yeah. Which, should I say what it's for?
Is that actually from the Vertigo?
Yeah,
universe?
No, I wouldn't say what it's for. That's a big thing.
I thought
thing
that
right
was the Cosmic Cube from Thor.
Yeah, right. No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And then it looks like in the next issue, the House of Mystery is involved.
Oh, right. Yeah. So they're trying to hit up a lot
of those Vertigo
superhero issues.
But overall, a very cool.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And like, you don't have to have been reading
Justice
League Dark.
I reviewed the first one when we all read it back then, and I haven't kept up with it since. I really like this issue.
Yeah. They do a good job of getting you caught up to where they are now at the beginning of this.
Definitely.
And yeah. No, it's good. All right. So up next, we've got Mind Management by Matt Kent.
It's Mind MGMT.
Well, doesn't MGMT just mean management?
Not in this.
Oh.
Electric Mail Now. It probably means management, but it's always...
But yeah, with this book, it might mean something else.
Might be the band MGMT. Matt Kent's awesome. He did Three Story. He did Super Spy. He did Robot Man and My Greatest Adventure is probably what he's most known for.
He did some sweet issues of Sweet Tooth.
Did some issues of Sweet Valley High.
He's taken over some
with
book.
Brittany Daniels.
He's about to take over Frankenstein.
He's about to take over Frankenstein.
Asian Shade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And this is his first crack at an ongoing series.
Oh, is this an ongoing?
I'm pretty sure.
That's exciting.
It doesn't seem
he,
to be
he says series. In the back, he has like his little letter column. He's like, I don't read single issues anymore. I get the trade, and I want to make this like the single issues that I would be picking up because I have to read them in single issues.
Well, I said to somebody today that this book reminded me a lot of Lost, and I feel like it made them very scared.
It made me scared when you said that.
But it does have that feel. Like there are a lot of little clues in here as to what's going on. The basic story is like there's a plane full of people. They get amnesia. Like everybody on the plane gets amnesia,
including the pilots, the children, everybody.
Yeah, and then when they load everybody off, they count everybody and everybody's there. But then like one of these passengers has gone missing,
and also one of the passengers that is accounted for.
Oh yeah, there was one kid
remembers everything.
Yeah, who remembers everything.
Oh yeah.
So and from there, it's kind of the story of this reporter.
Trying to find out what happened,
basically.
And find the missing person.
She's not a reporter, sorry. She's like a true crime writer, but she's decided that because it's the, I think, 20th anniversary of this, or no, second anniversary, not 20th anniversary, she's gonna go and like kind of interview all these people and try to find this missing person.
Yeah, and so she can write her next book.
Right,
basically.
Exactly. And that's kind of where it leaves you in the first issue. But
there's some interesting characters introduced.
There's crazy stuff going on in this.
There's maybe some kind of superpowers maybe introduced, not quite sure. There's some crazy stuff going on. There's a lot of little hidden stuff.
Supernatural stuff. Lots of
one of the coolest things about this is that there's a lot of like little things that are not actually in the story that are interesting. Like
along the side of each page.
Yeah, there's like these little text things that indicate that these pages are from like some kind of guide to getting away from like if everything goes wrong, here's what you do. You know,
like if you're a member of the Mind MGMT or whatever.
Yeah, it's labeled as a field guide for mind management.
And then there's like this weird like advertisement story thing that's in the front and back, that and there's like a secret message that's
there are secret
in
messages,
the letters
he says,
column.
All through this, there's definitely one in the letters column. There's an extra story on the inside and back inside covers that are telling the history of how like a pseudo psychic developed real psychic powers and almost helped prevent the start.
Sorry,
of
that's
World
what
War I mean.
And then there's an advertisement on the back for like mind gum.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Which he's on the back. It says
mind juice.
Look at the first six issues, and all of these ads will be put together to create an extra clue to what's going on.
Which might be that background image of it, which looks a little abstract.
Yeah, it looks like
the
beginning of an image.
Yeah. So very, very, very awesome.
Yeah. Very well thought out.
Basically, so far this year, Saga,
yep,
Mind the Gap, and Mind Management. Three first issues that have just really kind of blown me away.
Oh, there's one more.
Is there? Oh, Dancer? I thought it was all right.
No.
we skipped Dancer.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
we'll have to talk about Dancer next week. We're running out of time. We got one more book to talk about here. This is exciting for us.
It is the most exciting.
Yeah. This is The Phoenix Number One by, should I say, everybody in here?
No.
Lots of people.
It's by lots of people because we'll explain to you why it's by lots of people.
So The Phoenix actually came out this year and is now in contention for best ever starting issue. This is a British publication by a new company that is trying to do it in the kind of 2000 AD, you know, Japanese comic style,
like
thing.
Anthology where, style.
Yeah, you get an anthology comic with a whole bunch of different people doing short little stories, some of which continue issue to issue. But like 2000 AD and some of the big Japanese anthologies, it's weekly. Yeah. And they literally call it The Phoenix, the weekly story comic. And while these are sort of targeted at younger readers, they definitely have an edge to them, like a British edge.
They're all ages
to the
stuff. Yeah, they're not like dumbed down.
But they're not like
kids.
Watered down, dumbed down.
Yeah,
like
that's what
American
I mean.
Style
yeah.
stuff. And they've got like excerpts from books. They've got puzzles. They've got games. They've got, you know, all kinds of stuff. There's like a hidden search. They say that they've lost some feathers, like magical feathers that you have to find in one of these, or maybe a later issue.
There's like some ongoing thing about how to draw comics and stuff like that.
Like a section
it's cool.
on that.
It's got art contests and all sorts of stuff, but the stories in this are so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of these, it's definitely really just setting up these worlds.
Yeah, it's mostly like two or
just
three
a couple
pages each. Yeah.
But like one is this woman, she's arriving on this island that's full of dinosaurs. One's about a kid that, see, what Jared was saying about how maybe these aren't as, watered down. Yeah, like one's about a kid who drowns in his soup and then is transported into another world. Yeah.
One strip is about a guy who's interviewing dead people.
Yeah, which is great because he's interviewing Nikola Tesla, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
which is like, you know, it's like in the U.S. you would never see, like, basically he's like
interviewing
the corpse, like the zombie corpse of Nikola Tesla. But but it's great. And then there's like a little instructional thing about how to make comics.
And then there's my favorite one, which is this
so
Silk Roads. I have no idea where this guy came from, but it's basically Hergé.
A new Tintin
reborn.
Comic. Oh, yeah, the golden feathers thing.
Yeah, and this story in here is about, like, kind of what a phoenix is and what it means. and the art is so good.
It's so
it's
good.
Like, oh, I was gonna say it's like better than Hergé.
Oh, I don't know about that.
It's like a, like basically like Hergé.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like I tend to like, I mean, I love the art in that, but I really like the story by the Etherington brothers, which is like very cartoony, but has like these beautiful, that's the one where the kid drowns in his
soup.
And like that has a great style to it. They all look different, but there's like not stuff with bat, there's nothing with
there's
bat
one
art
about
in here.
A Star Cat that like an Adventure Time comic.
Yeah, or like Dinopopolis or something.
Yeah. Star Cat is so funny. Yeah. They're hyping the hyper warp for the cat. It's like, let's go into hyper warp. And there's basically this thing that comes out of the cat, and there's a ball yarn dangling in front of it, and it like speeds up. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So the whole thing is fun. I felt like all the writing was good.
Yeah.
When we ordered these, we were very excited about it, and it looked really good. And then when we got it, it was like
even better.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's as awesome as we hoped it would be. It exceeded our awesome expectations.
And as far as we know, we're the only people.
We are, because we ordered this directly from them, and they're like, we're excited to finally have this in America.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We're the only people.
We actually got an email today from somebody in California who was like, hey, can you send me a copy of this? Because you're like listed on their website as the only store in the U.S. that carries this.
Nice.
It's a great comic, and go to their webpage. I think it's
thephoenix.co.uk, I think.
Yeah, hold on. It's thephoenixcomic.co.uk, and they have some samples on there. You can kind of look at what to expect from these comics.
And we'll have it here weekly.
We will have it here weekly.
Yep. So issue 2 will be out next week.
We're really excited about this comic. Awesome. All right, so let's end this podcast on a high note and say the Phoenix is awesome.
Yep.
And we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.